going on, everybody? Anthony Freed here. Welcome to Badum Biz. All right, today on the show, we got Audra Mariel from Martin Howth. Audra was so cool to talk to, and she's a great vocalist. And Martin Howth is her artist name, which she creates songs using a loop pedal or a loop station. And she layers loops of her own voice, and she harmonizes against her own voice and creates all of these layers to create these like big compositions, which wind up being her songs. It's very cool. We talk a lot about it. I ask her a lot of questions about it, actually. And there's a little live performance from her on this episode. I'm excited for you guys to hear it. And one last thing, I'm doing drum lessons and drum tracks. Please hit me up at badumbiz@gmail.com if interested. All right, please enjoy the episode. Badum-biz. What's up, everybody? Welcome to Badum Biz. Anthony Frieda here. I got an awesome guest. I'm super, super, duper excited for this guest. Her name is Audra Mariel, and her artist name is Martin Howth. Welcome.
Thank you. Thanks for having me.
So just a little background on how I know about you. In Asbury Park, there's a venue, I guess it's a venue, but it's also, what is it? It's an art.
It's a gallery space.
Art gallery space. Yeah. And they have a cool stage. And it was just me and Kat London, Rich Veo, Paul O'Keefe. You all heard them speak on this show. And we were in the lineup of some really talented musicians. And Audra was one of them. And I was like, my jaw was dropping watching her perform, because she's one of these artists. She's got a beautiful voice, but she uses a loop station and is very creative with it. I've seen people do it, even on YouTube, but I didn't quite see it the way that you were doing it and the way your songs came out. I've seen gimmicky things where it didn't really sound like it could be an album, like a listening experience, but yours, totally a listening experience.
Oh, that's really a high compliment. I really appreciate that very much.
Of course. So you were saying that before we started recording that you have a background in jazz vocals, jazz singing.
I do. I started singing, I was in my early 20s. I was like 21. I had met several jazz musicians while I was getting my associate's degree. Like, I had gone away to school. I didn't much like where I had gone. And I came home and I'm like, I was just kind of taking classes at Brookdale to figure things out. And I auditioned for a show because I saw they had a theater department, and it turns out they have a wonderful theater department there. Oh my gosh. It was actually one of the best decisions I've ever made. And so when I was there, there were jazz musicians in their music department, like really seasoned jazz musicians. And just got to talking to them. I had always had an interest in jazz, and they kind of took me under their collective wings and took me out, helped me build a repertoire. That was Joe Accurso, Gary Mazzarappi, you may or may not have heard of, and Doug Clark. Those were like the three main fellows that were like my mentors at the time.
Shout out to those main fellows.
Those main fellows. Yeah. And then after that, it was just like, I don't know. I kept doing it through college. I went on, earned my BFA in theater. So I never really studied music formally. Just like a little bit of vocal training as part of my major, but I never really studied music at all, which in my mind is a hindrance, because I feel like I lack the language to communicate with other musicians. But I think it's also kind of the catalyst for this, which was ultimately a good thing, I guess. So
she's pointing to her really cool looking loop station, which is in like one of those vintage suitcases. It's so cool. I actually watched you like walk to the stage with it. I remember. I was like, that's so cute. And it's smart. You just like plugged in and ready to go.
It's super easy. And when I started out, it was something I think when you saw me at that point, I was still sitting on the floor, but soon thereafter I started standing, because I don't know much about much, but I do know when you're singing, it's much better to be standing than crouched over on the floor. So I started standing soon thereafter, but it was when I first started it was something to hide behind because I was so terrified of doing it in public. So it was nice to just be able to be the suitcase.
Can I ask you, I am very actually intrigued in your theater background. Can you go into a little bit of that if you don't mind?
Oh, cool. Yeah, no, not at all. It's funny, I was so on that track. So I earned my BFA at, so I got my associates at Brookdale Community College. They have a phenomenal theater department that's run by John Buckvec. It's really wonderful. And most of the people that left that program went on to earn their degrees. A lot of people ended up in theater ed. Like, it's a really great program to start with. So I finished my degree at Kane. And my focus was primarily, it's so weird, like I enjoyed music and I enjoyed theater, but very rarely was I in a musical.
Oh, wow. Okay.
I'm not a dancer by any stretch of the imagination. And I have a hard time with musical theater. I don't know if it's that I can't justify how like extra everybody is. I have like real, like mad respect for the people that are doing it because I understand how much work and effort goes into that kind of production. But when I was studying, my focus was more so in classical theater and Shakespeare.
Wow.
Yeah.
Oh, wow. So how much experience do you have acting in a play in front of a crowd and, you know?
Years. I mean, from when I was quite young and then through college. And then when I finished college, it was funny, by the time it was my senior year, I kind of knew that I wasn't pursuing it. There were a variety of contributing factors, but but after college, I did like a couple of tours. I did an educational tour. Actually, I guess they were both educational tours. One was based out of Louisiana, and we were traveling around through Louisiana, Mississippi, Texas, Alabama, I think Arkansas. But none of it made sense. You were just like pinging on the map and going to like different. It was wild. We did that. And I did a tour of Romeo and Juliet that was like in Manhattan and some of the outer boroughs and like along Long Island. So that was one that I was mostly driving from home. I wasn't like on the road. So,
wow. I mean, yeah. So, clearly you have a high ability in acting, like legitimate ability in acting.
I don't know. I guess I wouldn't do it if I didn't have some sort of ability. But I really enjoyed it very much. I miss it.
On
a lot of levels. But
when you're in it like that in a college situation, even me, like being. Mm-hmm. You know, I did music ed, but I was involved in a lot of ensembles, and I do miss that. I do miss the playing with other people on higher level stuff where you're just challenging yourself. And
yeah,
I love that. I miss it so much. Yeah, it's powerful.
It was a lot of fun, and I got to do a lot of like ensemble work. We did, I think, as part of that major at Kane, we did like a tour. Semester and tour, and we did a production of Agamemnon, which was like, oh my gosh, it was super physical, which for me was really challenging at the time and would still be challenging. I have like some muscular issues, which is one of the reasons why I didn't end up pursuing theater. Was something that I kind of decided at the time. It was weird. I was going through like a diagnostic process and kind of realizing like, I can't really use my body the way I want to, but at the time didn't really know why. And knowing, you know, in that industry that like, if I show up to a call and there's 200 people that look just like me and maybe read just as well, and that woman can, you know, pop up from a kneeling position on the ground because she doesn't have issues with her legs, they're gonna just hire her. And to look at me, they can't necessarily tell that I have, you know, any sort of disability or any difference in my strength when I'm walking into a room. So I kind of just was like, I don't want to do this, which is part of me wishes that I had a little more agency to be like, no, screw that, I'm going to do it anyway. But I think I was just feeling, I think I'd spent a lot of time trying to hide that and not let anyone know that it was a problem, which I think even years later, this many years later, I'm still struggling with that. I'm actually surprised that I'm even talking to you about it.
Oh, wow.
I have a question though.
Is it sort of like I have issues with carpal tunnel, mm-hmm. you know, but it doesn't stop at the wrist. It's all the way up to the neck. I mean, every day, sometimes it's excruciating. Is it something that was so bad? And obviously you have to perform it. You can't escape the pain and you actually have to push through it in what you do. Was it not only obviously physically painful, but I'm sure you're anxious because you're like, why are these issues happening? Yeah. Was it like debilitating?
It was, well, something that started, I guess I was a teenager when it started, and like things like my knees would just give out and I would fall.
Oh, wow.
And it would be this really, and I had gone to a specialist and he was like, oh, I know, this is your hips are just growing too fast. Your body can't keep up with it or something. And he's like, here's a brace. There's nothing you can do. And like sent me on my way. And I was like, no, this is weird. Like, and then years later, I think it took me falling in an intersection. I was walking in New York and I fell in the middle of a crosswalk and I'm like, this is dangerous.
Oh my God.
And I think I then started seeking a diagnosis, but it was such a terrible process. Oh my gosh. I happened to have what full coverage, like through a hospital, like through a charity care program. Cause I was a student at the time and I was working, I think maybe a weekend job. And I was eligible for full coverage. And it was that experience that like, I experienced like the health industry, because it is an industry, mm-hmm. like firsthand, yep. and some certain types of people who are in it just to kind of line their pockets and not mm-hmm. for other people's benefit. But I did get a diagnosis through that experience. It wasn't until after I graduated college though. And what they told me is like that I have a form of muscular dystrophy, actually, like adult onset muscular dystrophy. And they were like, well, we don't really know much about it, like enough to tell you if it's going to progress, how much it's going to progress, how quickly. They're like, but we'll be here when it gets worse. And when you're given that, I was just kind of like, what? But it was lucky at the time I was doing a show at the Algonquin Arts Theater in Manasquan. And I guess Bill was producing, one of the producer of the show, while I was going through this diagnostic process, they had done a biopsy of my leg that I don't really think they needed to do. I think that was one of the things that everybody was getting paid so that they did it. And they nicked a nerve in my leg and I was in such excruciating pain that I was having trouble walking and I needed to dance in the show. And the producer of the show was like, you know, my husband can help you. And he's going to see you like for 10 free sessions just to get you on your feet. And his husband now, I don't think they were married yet, works in what's called muscle activation techniques. And it's considered fitness, but a lot of athletes use it to recover from injury or to keep them like in top condition. But a lot of his clients are people with muscular issues or like joint issues or mobility issues. And he got me on my feet. He helped me with the nerve pain in my leg went away. He started to reverse some of the effects of the MD. And luckily I had already been seeing him when they diagnosed me. And I was like, so it was like my lifeline. Cause otherwise getting a diagnosis like that when you're in your 20s is like, and I was on this track to be a performer. Uh-huh. And I just felt so hopeless. I mean, even then I was like, what am I going to do? And again, I had gotten so used to hiding it that I was in that frame of mind. If you could be a person with a disability and struggle with your own ableism. Do you know what I mean? I was just like, I don't really know what to do with this. And so I was already singing jazz and I said to myself, I'm like, look, I can, you know, when push comes to shove, if things get bad, I can stand and sing or sit and sing somewhere. Mm-hmm. And so I kept doing it. But luckily I've been seeing my friend Chris for a long time and I've kind of just stabilized for the most part, or even improved, depending on how often I get to see him. So it's like, so I'm still like just hopeful and just doing what I'm doing. And in fact, I had a conversation with a theater friend of mine recently, and he kind of kicked me in the ass a little bit. He's like, how long, his name is also Anthony. And he's like, how long has it been since you've been on a stage? And I'm like, I don't know, like 5 years. Because I had done some like local things as well. I did some stuff at Algonquin Arts Theater. We did like a couple shows, and but I hadn't done anything like really major in a long time. And he was saying, you know, you really need to, he's like, it shouldn't matter. Like, you should be able to, if you really want to pursue it, you should. So, I started a theater group amidst all this, which I'm really not supposed to talk about. It's a little secret, but I could tell you about it. I'm not actually performing in it. I started the group to perform because my friend Anthony had kicked me in the ass, and I ended up like directing it. So right now we're rehearsing over Zoom, but we're going to be doing some outdoor performances in the fall, like appropriately distanced outdoor Shakespeare performances.
That's very cool. I mean, do you get a satisfaction from directing?
I do. I did some directing when I was in college, and I directed a couple things at the community college as well. And I've worked in the theater. Like, I've taught in the theater. I taught for Algonquin Arts Theater for like 8+ years, mostly working with young kids. And I was still teaching at Count Basie when all of this happened. Not so much teaching their theater classes. I was doing more educational outreach, and we were doing workshops with teachers on like arts education, not arts integration, but arts like creative teaching more so, where you're using a discipline to teach course material, not so much teaching the discipline alongside the course material. That makes sense.
That's interesting. That sounds cool.
Yeah, it was cool. Right now it's not, it was honestly one of the last things I did before everything shut down. I remember running a workshop or facilitating a workshop with like 3 teachers because everybody was trying to get their classroom virtual.
Yes. Okay.
So no one was in the room. I don't know. We almost outnumbered the facilitators almost outnumbered the participants at that particular, wow. It was wild. That was a wild time.
Thanks for sharing all that. I mean, you know, cause that stuff, it's hard to talk about. It's painful, you know, and like you said, you were young, and it's like when it's happening to you, you feel hopeless. That's the perfect word for it.
Yeah.
It sounds like you had something way worse than what I experienced, because like getting around and walking, you got to do that simple stuff. And to fear, you know, that something like that, an episode like that I can't imagine.
Yeah, it happened. I mean, I don't know. I wouldn't necessarily compare in that way when you're experiencing pain. So I never experienced pain, but with what you do, I mean, what you do is very physical, and the pain that you're describing is in the parts of your body that you're using when you're playing. So that's got to be really, like, that has to be really challenging for sure.
I had to kind of, for now, say, no, I can't pursue performance. Like, I just, you know, I can't do it until I can figure this out. So that's, you know, but it's fine because I teach, and I love to teach.
Yeah.
But yeah, it's, and people don't, you know, what your friend who, you know, kicked you in the ass, you know, you know, I mean, that's cool. And maybe you needed it.
Yeah.
But that is it's a difficult position to be in, because you know you want to do it.
Yeah. But
those fears are real. I mean, especially your situation. So I have nothing but sympathy. You know, I understand why you kind of like took time away from it. I totally get it.
Yeah. I mean, I had been doing it for a while, and like that would happen. My knees would give out on stage sometimes, and I would have to try to make like it was part of it, which was like, I guess, a really huge improvisation challenge. But sometimes it was just too much, and I would get so frustrated. And even when I was studying, the styles of theater that interested me the most were the really physical ones. And I would always be like, ah, damn, like, I wish I could do that. But then my friend Anthony would be like, but why can't you? Like, why can't you just do it the way that you can do it? Why do you have to do it the way, you know? He's very, I love him. He's a dear friend, and I'm happy that. So he went to Yale. He was somebody who went on to Yale, and I hadn't seen him in a long time. And he came, you know, he's been back, obviously. And I told him recently, because he was younger than I was, and he had said to me, he'll use the word mentor when he talks about me, which to me is like I'm not your mentor. Like, don't be silly. And then I said to him the other day, I'm like, I think you're more like my mentor at this point. I think I've become the mentee officially. And it's been wonderful to feel encouraged because I hadn't even considered getting back into the theater in a really long time. So it was really, I'm happy, but I'm also happy with the place that I'm in. Like, I honestly wouldn't have it any other way. Without my theater background, I probably wouldn't write the way I write.
Yeah, segue into that. I was gonna ask you. So obviously what you just said, it makes sense. It makes sense that you would write in a way that reflects those. I mean, it's instinct. It's performance in any regard, in my opinion, is instinct. And yours just happens to be on stage in a, how would you, I mean, am I correct when I'm saying you're in a story, really? And you're not really yourself. You're in a new reality. So does that kind of go into your writing, that type of thing?
In a sense, I think, well, it's funny though, I get like super nerdy about it, but in the way that I get nerdy about theater, like the way that I get nerdy about a piece of Shakespeare, I would love taking it apart and breaking it down and finding every nuanced meaning of each word and finding all the layers in it and exploring that. It was one of my favorite things to do. And when it comes to writing, I feel like I've tried to do that as well. Like, there's some songs, don't get me wrong, that I write like really quickly, like that just kind of come out. But then there's some that it takes a lot of time and effort. And the first song I wrote was very much that way, but it was born of a challenge that was presented by a friend who, do you know Cody McCrory? Have you ever met Cody?
Nope.
The bassist. He's wonderful. Plays in like Thank You Scientist and...
Oh, I know Thank You Scientist.
He's band leader. We used to cut the grass as his band. He was in Homeless Sapiens when they were playing around. We play in a jazz band together. He had a project called the Visitors Quintet, which was five acoustic musicians or musicians playing acoustic instruments would come to a place and they would only ever go to a place once as a visitor, as visitors. And every musician would write an original piece for the evening to be performed that evening. And everybody would play on everybody's piece. And I book a series at the Strauss Mansion Museum in Atlantic Highlands, and I had booked the Visitors Quintet for this series.
Cool.
And he invited me to play as a guest artist. He's like, will you write a song for the night as a guest? And I said, okay. And I had been messing around on like a jam man pedal, like a guitar pedal for a little while with looping. And so I wrote the first song that I wrote on a looper, which was Seraphine. And he had said to me, he's like, you know, you could use effects if you want. I would like it if like the human voice was the only thing that was electronic. And I'm like, no. We're just using the loop station. I'm not going to use any effects. And so it forced me to try to use my voice in a different way, try to get different sounds out of my voice. When I was writing the song, I was trying to think about like the layers and how the layers and the sounds that I use in the layers can better illustrate the story. And the story was about a piece of pottery. So I was trying real hard to, even like the ahs that set up, like it goes, ah. So I was thinking of the clay really open when it starts on a wheel and it's, ah, when it starts to build. And then when it gets more hollow, I don't know if I'm going to be able to do it if I'm super dry. When you sing on an inhale, it sounds even more wooden and hollow.
Oh, wow.
So as it would grow, I was like, then it's getting more hollow. You know, and I was watching all these pottery videos and I was watching this one guy on a wheel. So the rhythm, the percussive element is the sound of the pottery wheel as I kind of remembered it from the videos that I was watching. And I did this whole thing, and I was so proud of it. And I'm like, nobody's going to know this but me. But because I was super geeking out about those different layers and telling the story about the piece of pottery, I was like, it reminded me of that kind of text work that I would do in the theater. And that's how this was all born. And that's why I don't use effects. and I still won't use the facts. That's why I write for now. Like, there are people that are like, that's cool, but you should use effects. There's so many effects on that loop station. And I'm like, yeah, but I like doing, like, this is challenging this way. Or like, you should use tracks, because then you can write your songs would be more, you know, they could be more elaborate. And I'm like, yeah, but I like looping it live. Like, it, because then it's fresh every time, like the theater, like when you're in the theater, it could be like a little bit different every time.
Oh, so. My God. I am so excited by what you just said. I agree with you, by the way, because I don't like using samples on drums. I don't like playing to tracks. I want to make the sounds.
Yeah.
Like, I mean, I'll try to like give you a little example, but. Like, I like doing something that sounds electronic, but I want to make it happen in real life, basically.
Yeah.
So there's a pride to that there, but it's fun. And by the way, too, man, it's so cool what you said, because I totally immediately saw when you started talking about the pottery and you started to research pottery, like actually research by watching people who do pottery, and then the philosophy of the shape of the air inside that pot. It's like you did method acting. You know what I mean?
Like a little bit. Like, I'm the pot now. Like a little bit.
That's so cool. Yeah.
It was, I mean, it bombed. The first time I did it live was a total disaster. And that was something that it took me a while to get over. I would get so nervous when I would have to loop that my hands would shake and my vocal cords are constricting. And your vocal cords can't constrict when you're doing something as specific as singing a line on an inhale. Like, you need to be lubricated. You need to be relaxed. And I just, it was, oh my God, what a disaster. But grew from there, I hope.
You know, you have like qualities of a percussionist too, because percussionists also have to like, in the classical world, a composer will write a specific sound. You'll see the note and they'll say supposed to represent thunder or supposed to represent stomp, giant's feet. I don't know, something like that. And you have to find a sound to represent that. And sometimes you'd be in like a junkyard looking for something to hit with a stick or a mallet, you know? So for you, it's kind of, it's cool. You're like, I'm screw effects. I'm just going to use my voice as the instrument. And, and when, you know, Audra was actually, like when we were sound checking before, you were performing, and this is for listeners, when she was performing, like, it was like a sound check, and I call it a performance because it was so on. It was so, like, it was like listening to a recording. But when you were doing your layered harmonies, when they played together, she loops a vocal part, and then it starts repeating, then loops a harmony over that, and you did, like, three part, right, or something like that. There was an overall timbre to those three parts that came alive. And that was really cool too. So I can't really, it's hard to explain what I experienced just from listening to that, but that's kind of my take on it. And so you're just very specific with your sounds, which is what it sounds like.
I try to be when I was able to get over being nervous so that I can be relaxed enough that I could use all of this properly, I'm able to be more specific, because then I'm focused on what I'm doing and not focused on being nervous that I'm going to screw it up. And there's still times, depending on where I am and what I'm doing, that gets in my way. But when I'm writing the songs, for sure, I'm able to come up with, and there are times that I'm like, doing these virtual shows or like taped performances is real hard, because I'll be doing it with headphones and I'll hear, my mouth is clicky. Why is my mouth so clicky? Or like, you know, and I was doing a tape performance of that song that I started sound checking with. And it took me so long and I was getting so frustrated. And my partner, he's a photographer, and he was videoing me, and I could see that he's seeing how frustrated I'm getting. And he's like, why don't you just take a break? I'm like, I can't. And I'm like, God damn it, these are so fucking hard. Why are, like, they're hard. It's not easy to do. And he's like, I know, it's hard. Like, just give, like, hang on. "Why don't you drink some water and take a break?" And then I would be like, "No, I can't stop, because if I stop, I'm not warmed up, and then I have to warm up again." But I just get like, I don't know, recognizing that when I'm writing them, I'm totally relaxed and I'm not thinking about anything else, and I'm more apt to be playful with the shape of my, with like where the sound is resonating, which is something that I wish I had studied formally longer. I know some things, but I like to play with where the sound resonates. And that's when you're talking about the specific timbre of like specific loops that are like groups of harmonies. Sometimes I have to, if I don't match them, it doesn't blend.
Yeah.
And if you're trying to think of them as instrumental parts, it needs to be the same instrument for each of those individual tracks.
So you were accurate. Every note that you sang was very accurate.
I don't think it was.
Oh, really?
I was wearing my headphones and I was like, "Oh gosh, Anthony hears this. Oh, I hope he knows that this is just, I'm just warming up."
Right there though, right there. I got to stop you. You're such an artist, because you understand what your, it's your craft. You understand it. You've either climbed a tree or dug in a deep hole of knowledge and experience.
Yeah.
And it's hard to remember that most of us, even somebody like me who has experience with music, I'm on the ground, and you're all the way either up in the sky or down underground. And it's hard to like remember to come back to the surface to show, "Oh, okay, yeah, they have no idea the mistakes that I just made. They're not even close. No close. It was so good," is what I'm saying. And
that's really nice of you.
So yeah, I mean, now, can I ask you, because I'm just curious, do you improvise at all?
So when I write these, that's a really good question, because I get people who come up to me sometimes if they see me do it live, and they're like, "Were you just making that up as you went?" And I'm like, no, I wasn't. But sometimes when I write them, I'll leave room for improvisation.
Okay.
And depending on the song, and also, like I'd mentioned to you, the reason why I try to keep the tempos consistent, but I don't want to rehearse with a click. Okay. I don't want to hear a click before I start. It throws me off. And a lot of clicks have a tone, and that throws me off too.
Yeah.
But so there's like a certain inconsistency. There are times that a song might be played at a slightly slower tempo, but then I feel like I discover more about the song. It's like when you play jazz and someone says like, "Do that, but can you do it like, you know, a bossa feel?" And then you'll play a song that you would normally swing, and you're like, "Oh, I actually really like this." And then I find new things in the melody because I'm trying to suit the feel of the song. It happens a little bit, not so much with this, because I don't actually write music. It's all about muscle memory, essentially. Like, yeah. I memorize everything, so it doesn't deviate too much from where it is. But like I said, if I leave room for improvisation within the song, then yes, there's improvisation within the song.
I think that's really cool, because I'm definitely into improvisation in any form. And obviously what you do definitely has room for it, for sure, in general. Mm-hmm. Just that medium. What was I going to ask you? So much to talk about. So many ideas in my head, because you're the only person I've talked to about this particular looping method here. So here's what I was going to ask you. You said you don't work with a click track.
Mm-hmm.
Is the setting on your looper, though, is it gridded out? Does it have, like, do you set the BPM and it loops within that BPM, or?
So what I tend to just do is set up the first loop and have the presets that, while you have an infinite number of, like, measures, like your measures are free, mm-hmm. but everything loops in time with that first track, is how I typically set it up, unless there's something specific that I'm doing where I want something to be out of time with that track. So I essentially set the tempo when I start the song instead of pre-setting anything. Did that answer your question?
Yeah, I think so. I think we're talking about the same thing, because I was going to say, if you were just doing your own looping without any sort of unless that is what you're doing. And then I'm extremely impressed, because that's hard to do, because you have to be so specific when you're hitting that button, right? When you're recording and then releasing, right?
Yeah. Well, so they are, so the tracks are running in time with one another, but I do have to be careful with my timing in that, oh gosh. And this is where like my brain is like, I'm not equipped to talk about this.
That's okay.
Where, if I don't, and it could be like, if I'm off by a teensy bit, it doesn't have to be a lot. I can either capture a sound that I don't mean to capture. Like I'll capture a lead vocal line where I mean to be capturing a loop. Or if I don't, capture the loop in time, like end the track that I just recorded, it throws the timing off completely, and I would either have to like erase it and start over, et cetera, because it won't loop the way I want it to, you know, within the structure of the song, if that makes sense.
Yeah, it starts in line, right? And then as time goes on, they separate, which is, I guess, phasing is what that's called. Mm-hmm. So that's why I was saying, if your song is 3-4 minutes long of loops and you hear a constant loop from the very beginning of the song, mm-hmm. your time has to be perfect, basically, or else they're going to separate those parts. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. And I witnessed that, and I was like, holy shit. I was like, that is incredible. It's hard to do. I've tried it with like just somebody's guitar. I don't play guitar that well, but I was just messing around with rhythm, and I was just trying to loop things. And even when it had its own tempo setting, it was still hard to do. The timing of the pushing and then the releasing is, or whatever, however you would describe that. That is mm-hmm. very difficult
to me. It is. Depending on, it was really difficult when I was using a guitar pedal, because there was also a delay.
Yeah. Yeah.
And I don't have enough strength in my legs to really use my feet with great accuracy. Mm-hmm. So I needed something that I could use manually. And so I sold my TV to buy this used on Reverb. And I was like, I was so excited the morning that it came, because I'm like, it has faders, I could play with like, and that it was a huge game changer. I think I'd written like 2 songs on the Jam Man, and I was like, I can't do this anymore. I need something better, a better tool. So
what is it called that you're using right now?
I use a Boss RC505.
Cool. I'm going to look that up, because I just want to see what it looks like.
Oh yeah. My suitcase is blocking it. And if it wasn't set up, I would pick it up and show it to you.
That is really, I mean, that is really cool. Now, are you going to, now, did you have like, did you want to talk about, or how about this? Because you were going to perform something and show the audience, which is going to be so cool. I'm so excited. Are you going to do something that, because you are in the process of writing an album mm-hmm. and recording an album. Are you going to do one of those songs?
I will do one of those. Well, the song that you heard is the next song that I'm slated to record, actually. But I've done like videos and stuff and released little bits of that song, so people have heard it.
Okay.
There's a couple songs that I've been working on that haven't been played, and I could probably do one of those for you.
Well, I'll leave that up to you, because I don't want to spoil people. Yeah, or, you know, when it comes out, it'll be like, oh my God. Yeah, but if you're going to do something that people know, that's totally cool, because it's just a pleasure to listen to regardless.
Well, I appreciate that.
Of course.
I'm glad you're enjoying it.
But whenever you're ready, you don't have to even do it now. We could keep talking. I just wanted to, And I'm looking at this looper thing. That looks very pretty. It's got so many cool like dials. It looks very slick too. Wow.
It lights. You could see flashy lights, and the lights help too to know where you are in the loop, so that you can time your next loop.
Wow.
Against it. Yeah.
So cool.
Yeah.
What are your influences of listening, by the way? Because you said you have an acting background and it's a lot of classical theater. So mm-hmm. what about the music you grew up listening to, or what informs your writing style?
I listened to a lot of jazz growing up. And I realized the other day how much Ella Fitzgerald I listened to. I was saying it to someone. I'm like, I had a mix CD. A friend made me a mix CD, and I wore that CD out. Like when I first got my driver's license, I was listening to a mix of Ella Fitzgerald and Billie Holiday that a friend had made me.
Wow.
But as I started to listen more to jazz, I listened to some instrumental jazz, but a lot of vocal jazz, a lot of Nina Simone. Oh my gosh.
Oh, wow.
And then, but you know, I didn't only listen to jazz growing up. I listened, like, I was a 90s kid, you know, early aughts, you know, growing up through high school. I listened to, like, I listened to a lot of Radiohead and, like, women like Tori Amos and like Fiona Apple and stuff. But Tori Amos, I think lyrically, because sometimes her lyrics are very, they're very specific. She's telling a really specific story. And I feel like I would think to myself, nobody's going to understand what I'm talking about. And sometimes I get on myself about that because I'm telling a specific story, but then I forget that people, you know, always interpret things through their own lens. Mm-hmm. And even if you have something so specific in mind, all they have to do is latch onto one phrase and think like, oh, that piece is me. And this is a different piece of me. You know, that's nothing that you were writing about. And I think it's remarkable and wonderful that we're able to do that. Like that writing and music speaks to the human condition in that way. But, absolutely. But I would think of her specifically because her lyrics are so specific in her storytelling. And there are times that I'm like, or even with Radiohead, that you're like, what is this? I don't necessarily know what this song was about, but I know what it's about for me, you know?
Yep.
And that was a huge influence. But with looping and stuff, I've been, you know, there are people that would tell me, you remind me of Dirty Projectors. You listen to Dirty Projectors. And at first I didn't. And then I did. And I'm like, oh, I understand. Or like the Tune Yards, who I love the Tune Yards. Yeah, I'm trying to think of like who I'm listening to right now that I'm like, this is inspiring me. But there's a lot. There's so many.
I mean, it just could be anything as like, you know, this right now, this album is, you know, this just came out and I'm loving it. Or the last couple of months I've been listening to this. Like I can name a couple.
Who are you listening to? I want to hear who you're
Oh, you want to hear? Okay, cool.
Yeah. Sure.
Absolutely. I was just listening to Tom Misch, I think his name is.
Tom Misch. Yeah, I have not heard of Tom Misch.
Yeah, he's a UK artist. I guess he's a guitarist, but he sings too, and he's got like instrumentalists. They all have jazz backgrounds, I guess, and sounds like it. And but they do like hip hop inspired, neo soul.
Oh, cool.
I mean, a little bit of funk, a little bit of disco in there. It's very and the instrumental the instrumentals are so well performed. I mean, it's so good. So I've been listening to a lot of him. Disclosure just came out with a new album that they're like kind of like house,
mm-hmm.
like the newer house music. UK artist,
mm-hmm.
Jordan Rakai, UK artist. I like a lot of UK artists currently, but yeah, a lot of that stuff I've been listening to for sure.
Have you ever heard? This is an album I've been listening to a lot. Kadia Bonet.
No, but I'm
going. The Visitor. Oh my god. When you were talking about this, like sort of amalgamation of different styles, it's like, it reminds me, like it sounds like it could have been recorded in like the 70s to me. Like there's certain, and I don't know if it's because she's I think she's a classically trained violinist. I was either reading an NPR interview or listening to one, and this was her first album. And oh my gosh, and her layering, and someone recommended it to me because they were like, her harmonies remind me of yours. And I'm like, please. And it's so good. But I have to listen to it all the way through. That's how beautifully it's written because it flows so nicely one song into the next. So recommend that album I've been listening to, but it was released in like 2016 or something. I'm saying, how did I not know about this yet? Like, why did it take me this long?
Isn't it cool that right now, if you were to listen to the most reachable and accessible music stations, you know, You're gonna listen to a similar sound all the way through. But I love that there are really talented people who actually have an opportunity to grow a fan base with the internet, who have amazing material, and they're incredible. And, you know, like I find that it's mostly musicians that go around trading these names of like, have you heard, like the way you just talked about this, Kadia,
I believe I'm saying that correctly. I was looking it up to make sure I was saying it correctly because I was talking. I've been talking about that album so much. So I'm pretty sure it's.
Well, here it's spelt
K A D.
Yeah, J A. Yeah,
J A. Yeah, I believe right. It's Katya.
The way you're talking about that album, I'm going to listen to it.
I hope you enjoy it. I'm really good.
I'm going to listen to it because, I mean, and that's the thing. It's like, you know, when you have an informed ear, when you're somebody who has an informed ear, and I know you do, I appreciate your taste without a doubt, and your recommendations go to the top of the list. A lot of, you know, and then sometimes like common folk, we'll call them common folk who aren't, you know, musicians. I call them common listeners. How about that? I don't want to be harsh. The common listeners, sometimes like my cousin, she'll go, "Have you heard this?" And she'll send me a link to something. I go, "No, this is awesome." And you know, yeah. And so it's starting to bleed out into the common listeners. And I like that even more because then somebody like you, when you do release an album, you know, you might find somebody who's just like, "Oh my God, they wrap themselves around your new album and all your material." Like, you have to check out Martin Howth. Oh my God. And they start just sending it to everybody. It's a great time for that. You know, it doesn't have to be an explosive, "Hey, you're everywhere in every commercial." It does not have to be that at all. It could just be, "Wow, have you heard this?" That is a powerful statement.
I appreciate your saying that. And I do hope that we stay in that place and that we're sort of headed in that direction. I'm someone that's not, especially I'd be given what it is I'm doing, but I'm not too keen on the whole like monetizing everything. Everything is assigned value based on like how potentially lucrative it is. And that's, or like how huge it's going to get. Mm-hmm. And that I'm just, I wrestle with that sometimes. I have to like just make peace.
Same here. I mean, that's the thing. It's, most of the things that are going to make me money doing what I do as a drummer, I don't want to do.
Yeah.
And I did for a couple of years, like weddings and cover band stuff. And I just got tired of it. And yeah, I'm happy not doing it, to be honest with you. And there are people that want to do it and they should do it. You know, it's not me though. I like creating things though. I like to play. If I can create a song with some musicians and we love it, and we spend more money doing it than we do making money, that's still great to me. You know, that's like going on a vacation and coming back from the vacation like, "Oh, that was money well spent. I needed that." It's the same thing in my opinion.
Yeah, for sure. What is, do you mind if I ask you, is it cool if I ask you questions?
Ask away.
What is your, I know, I've heard you say that you've played jazz, that you have like more of a jazz background, I'm guessing, but like what is your favorite style in which to play, or do you play in variety of styles?
I have a classical background doing like percussion, but all the way through that, that's like 5 years or something. All the way through that, even before that, I was playing drum kit. So all of my stuff is like from a classical percussionist's technique and mentality. However, I did play some jazz in college too. And I just had good teachers who were able to really communicate the role of a drummer in jazz. That's so important. If you don't know that, it's very abstract to at first. But to answer your question, like what stuff I play. I mean, a bunch of years ago, I got really obsessed with, like I said before, drummers who make electronic sounding music, but acoustically. And I can throw out a bunch of names like JoJo Mayer, Chris Dave. And now, I mean, those names now have multiplied. I have like a collection. It's like I have a bunch of toys that I got that are my superhero action figures. And now there are so many of them now. And like, I can say Brody Simpson's another one. Mark Juliana. I mean, there's so many. And every day on Instagram, I get like, it's a really cool community, actually, of drummers. And you always see in your feed, like, "Oh, there's another one. Here's a new favorite drummer." And they usually fall in line with like hip hop, electronic music in some way, sometimes like a fusion of jazz and hip hop, or a fusion of jazz and electronica or something like that. Mm-hmm. So if I can, I mean, lately, I guess I'm doing more hip hop, I guess is what I'm. Yeah. Yeah. I had a bass player buddy of mine, Pat Dalby, came over and we recorded some like hip hop, but we were trying to emulate J Dilla beats. And J Dilla is this like legendary producer who changed hip hop. I mean, so yeah, that's, I guess that's what I'm doing, sort of.
That's awesome. And awesome, like, I guess, I know it's challenging to collaborate in this way, but I don't know, I guess when you're met with a challenge like that and you still find a way to do it, it makes it, I feel like you must be getting something additional out of it that you wouldn't be getting otherwise. Does that make sense?
Absolutely. Because a couple of years ago, I just started, well, a bunch of years ago, I bought an interface. I had a MacBook, you know, and a bunch of microphones. And I just started recording myself to hear myself back. That was really the only reason for it. And then you start, wait, what if I mix this so that the bass drum has a little bit more oomph? And you know what? Maybe that snare drum has a little whack to it. And then you start asking friends. You go on YouTube. You try to learn how to mix, how to use compression and all that stuff. And now, a couple years later, I can make decent sounding drum tracks. And I just did something last week where I put out a video where I was doing like house music.
But I watched it.
Oh, you watched? Oh, cool. Thank you for watching that. And I covered a song by Disclosure, Holding On. Yeah. And I was very proud of it. I was like, all right, I'll share that. I won't share something if it's just like, hey, look at me. I'm never posting shit like that. I want like, hey, check this out. And if you don't like it, tell me you don't like it. I don't care. If you love it, tell me you love it. But I was proud of it. So, but that's the kind of stuff like what you just said. If I didn't start doing that stuff and following that those breadcrumbs of interest, you know, and like really like little challenges at a time, you know what? I really want to be able to do, I want to have bumping drum tracks, like head rocking drum tracks. How do I get it to sound like that? If I didn't take those challenges on, those little mini challenges one at a time, I wouldn't be able to do this Zoom session right now. I wouldn't be teaching virtually from home here in my studio. I mean, there are a bunch of things, like you said, if I didn't make certain decisions, you know, I don't know if I wouldn't be here doing this right now. And yeah, I'm, it's good to hear you say that too, because clearly you made some decisions that have led you to where you're at now. And it's exciting.
It is. Like, I don't think I would change any of it. It's weird. I definitely wouldn't. But it does feel like it was another lifetime. Like when I think back to my college days and what I wanted, I have a friend who teases me because when I was really, when I was starting out in college, I met her doing a show and was singing jazz on the side. And she was commenting on like my singing. And I was like, well, I don't really consider myself a singer. I'm more of an actor who sings. And she'll every once in a while will just say that to me. Like if I post a video or something, or like if I'm for talking and I'm talking to her about gigs or whatever, she'll be like, well, I don't really consider myself a singer. So I'm like, get the hell out. She does it all the time to this day.
But you know, you're honest. I like that because I'm similar. I'm not a mix engineer.
Yeah.
I engineer and mix my own stuff sometimes with other people, but I'm not a mix engineer, you know, and I find it very important to say that and to state that, but let's be honest, you're a singer.
I think maybe at this point I've accepted that. Good. What I am not, though, I will say this, is I am not a beatboxer, and I really want to get better at, when you said, oh, you're like a percussionist, part of my brain was like, no, you're not a percussionist. I'm like, clearly, Anthony's never seen you use a rhythm egg. You know, I'm just not. I really, like, I have a hard time. There was, and some of these sounds are just like, I'm just playing with what sounds I can make with my mouth. But I've watched, like, really good beatbox artists. I'm like, damn, like, I really wish I could do that.
I love it.
So what I tend to do is just make the sounds like more sparse just to establish some sort of rhythm. But when I was recording this album that I'm recording now, and Kevin Grossman is a percussionist, we play in a jazz band together. He and he engineered my first record and is engineering this one. When I recorded this one song with him.
Which is called, hold on, I had it up here before.
The first album?
Yes.
Wayward Warbler. The Wayward Warbler was the first album.
2016.
Was it 2016? Was that when I released it?
No, I'm blind.
I thought it was like 2018. I was like, yeah. Damn, that was a long time ago. No, it's 2018. The funny thing is that I believed you. I'm like, Anthony knows my timeline. I guess I don't know. We were doing this album, and I said to him, I was like, okay. And the way we've been recording them is that we've tried doing it live, and it might be something that we're going to revisit, but he can really, if we isolate each of the tracks and he just sets up the loops, himself, he has more control over the levels. And so we've been doing it that way. It's painstaking with some of these because there's so many layers. And I'll start laying down vocals. And then when we get all of the layers together, I'll do the lead vocals over it. And, I'm laying down the vocals for the song and I'm like, okay, we're getting to the percussive track. I was like, it's weird. It's sort of like I'm saying the word potato. And he was like, all right, so I'm going to call this track, how many of these are there? And I'm like, there's two or there's three. And he's like, okay, I'm going to call this potato one. And then I start with the percussive, I do the sound and he just starts laughing. And he's like, wait, I wasn't ready. He's like, you're really saying potato. I'm like, yeah, Kevin, I'm not a beatboxer. I'm not a real percussionist. Like, yes, I'm saying the word. It's like not vocalizing, but like saying like, which sounds like potato. He's like, you're really saying potato.
I think that's what made me, because I remember paying you a compliment that you reminded me of Tom York music. Only because... because I'll describe it as this. Those sounds, first of all, they were in time. So that's all I really care about, right? And they're unique sounds. They're very textural. And that's Tom York's music. They're not your typical samples. They're very like textural. They're specific. And that's, so I think it's cool. I think it sounded, the way you did it, how about this? The way you did it, I didn't hear anything like that. So that's yours. So it doesn't matter if you don't, if somebody was like, oh, it's terrible beatboxing. It doesn't matter. The rhythm is there. The feel is there.
Yeah.
I was able to hear, you have like a low bass drum note, you have a ch-ch or like a snare drum or something, clap, whatever it might be. And then you understand it. It's all just low, medium, high frequency. You understand it. I saw that right away.
Thanks.
Yeah, of course.
Thank you. Yeah, but sometimes it's potato. But it's fun. And then I caught myself doing it the other day. I'm like, am I saying potato again? But it's just but you can't think about it because it is like when you zoom out, it texturally works. Like I'm gravitating toward those plosive sounds for that reason and in that order for that reason.
In context, it sounds different too than when it's soloed, right?
Yeah, it does. But poor Kevin was like, whoa, you really are saying potato. Yep.
That's so cool. I would love to hear you perform something if you're ready.
Yeah, I'm ready. I'm going to get myself more water so that I could be nice and lubricated. And then I'll do something or like a couple things. We'll see what you have time for.
Awesome. Got plenty of time.
All right, cool.
What if what we thought was the end turned out to be the great remembering? What if there was everything, everything, yes, everything, everything, yes, everything, everything, yes, everything? What if what we thought was the end turned out to be the great remembering? What if what we thought was the end turned out to be the great remembering? What if there was everything, everything, yes, everything, everything, yes, everything?
All of this is the
this change the sun. I make this on in the seas. All this change the sun. I make this on in the seas. All this change the sun. I make this on in the seas. All this distance, all this distance, all this distance, all this distance, all this distance. Hit your tongues just as you stand. Was that a rattle or a sigh? Was that a rattle or a sigh?
That was so cool. I love the percussion because it sounded like, again, texturally, it kind of sounded like a cajon a little bit, which is super cool. But the harmonies, when you would have the loops, it was very visual too. It was like you would have the loops going, and then when you would fade out immediately those loops, and it would just have those harmonies, and then you'd start another verse. I mean, that is so cool. That's like very produced. It sound, you know what I mean? It has that kind of very cool produced effect to it, but you're doing it right there, and that's so cool.
Thanks. Thank you. I'm glad you liked it. That's one, like I've said, I don't get ears on these when I'm working on them and not playing them out. And getting musician ears on them is really cool because, you know, you start to hear, even when I'm running them, like I don't hear them the same way as if, you know, as when I'm playing them out. I don't know. It's weird. It's different energy. Absolutely. And you just end up like going through the motions and you're like, yeah, that's what that song sounds like. But then you don't really, I'm like, but does it work? Is it good? I don't know. I've only listened to it when I'm playing it like myself. So I appreciate it.
Of course. I was going to ask you now, as far as like an album goes now. So you're looping, I guess, with that piece of machinery there, you're sort of limited to what that thing can do, but you're doing a lot with those capabilities.
Mm-hmm.
When it comes to an album, and I guess maybe the mix engineer, Kevin Grossman. Maybe I would have to ask him, but I'd like to hear your thoughts on it. Are you going to have things like whatever voices you bring in, are you going to have panning? Like something's going to be more on the right ear, something more on the left ear, going back and forth, things like that.
Kevin actually has one of these loopers. He's a really great percussionist. You should really check him out. He plays hand pan. So he'll have a whole rig, like a whole pedal board with all of these effects the loop station and he's playing handpan or melodica. Like, he'll bring all of these things and he's doing it all at once and he's panning because there's a panning effect on here. But I won't use it because I'm keeping track of so many things in my brain. And Kevin is this person who's like, you could do it, Aj. Like, you could do it. Like, just do it. I do, like, because he can do it. So he thinks, like, you should play with the panning because it would add so much to what it is you're doing. And he's probably right. And I'm just terrified of doing it. So I have that capability here. But yes, when he engineers the album, he definitely plays with panning. And he made, I mean, when I say, like, painstakingly went through that album, and Wayward Warbler isn't a really long album. It doesn't have that many tracks on it. I mean, some of the tracks are long, but there were so many layers on some of those songs, and he did such an incredible job of adding that. It just adds this extra texture to it when you're listening to it, and you can pan like that.
Absolutely.
Yeah. So, but I guess that answers your question. Yes, there will be panning in the recording. And if I would ever listen to Kevin's sage advice, there would be panning in my live performance also.
Well, you know, I was going to say too, when I want something, then I'll go through the, you know, the efforts to get it. So
yeah,
for you, I guess you might actually want that someday. And you'll buy the whatever it has to be and learn how to use it. You'll definitely do that if you want it, you know. Obviously, there's a lot more in seconds that you have to quickly turn knobs and get.
But he can do it. He can do it and not get thrown off of the rhythm because he's a really good percussionist. Like, I will get so, I'm like, you don't understand. I think you have more faith in my abilities than, but because I can. There is a pan. There is a way that you can pan on here.
Oh, you can. Okay.
You can. But I haven't delved into it. And I honestly should have taken the time. Not that I had extra time in quarantine because I've been working through all of this, but it's something that it's a goal. That is a goal because whereas I don't necessarily want to use the other effects that are on here because there are a few effects that you can use. Panning is one that I'm like, well, it's not really altering the sounds that are coming out. It's just placement of where the sounds are coming out.
Yeah.
So, yeah.
I'll say this as far as looping, percussively looping, meaning, you know, first of all, what you're doing by holding a note out for a very long time, timing how that note resonates with the previous note from the previous loop, and then also the timing of when to release that note. And I can't tell you as a percussionist, as a drummer, how difficult it is to hold out a note and then think about timing. It's very difficult for me. So the thought of hitting a loop button while holding out notes like that, and then you're doing vibrato, you're putting crescendo on those notes. You're also doing specific, like you said before, specific sounds. You're going for specific timbres. And I mean, if I was just hitting something, like hitting the sound and playing the rhythm on like the snare drum or the high, whatever it would be, to me, it's like, well, I just hit the button. That's another thing to hit. But you're staying with every note. I mean, you are holding that note's hand all the way to the end of it. You know, that's something as a percussionist, I don't, even a timpani, like even a timpani, I just roll my hands and it just vibrates. But the act of actually pushing air and holding that sustain, I mean, that's really, it's a different form of thinking in my brain.
I never thought of that. See, I guess because what you do is so, for me, beyond my scope, because I have a hard time keeping. So even as a singer, like I made the joke about a rhythm egg, because I have a hard time moving in a different rhythm than what I'm singing. Mm-hmm. I can sometimes if I lock it in, but with this, the timing of when I hit the buttons, the way it's in my body is how things flow with where the notes are. You know what I mean? Like as I'm singing, mm-hmm. I know I hit the button on this downbeat or on this, but it all works in conjunction with this muscle memory, if that makes sense at all. And that's how it gets drilled into my head, is that I hit this button when I'm doing this with my voice.
That makes sense. So you're, yeah, so everything is going from the physical start, stop, breath, whatever it might be. Mm-hmm. Of the voice. That makes sense. Yeah, that makes a lot of sense.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I mean, I totally, don't get me wrong, I totally get it. As what I do, I use multiple limbs.
Yeah, you do.
I get that. I got to tell you though, that becomes its own language in itself, that physical language. And you don't think about it the way people see it. When people see four limbs happening at the same time, they hear the synchronized patterns happening at the same time. Yeah, of course you look at that, you're like, how's that happening? But the way that it looks is not how it feels. It's a different, when you break through, when you have that, those connections there, yeah, in your brain, with your limbs. I mean, it's a language. It's, mm-hmm, a physical language that I can always access. So, but you know, it comes with time, of course, and practice. And, yeah, but what you're doing, it's so cool. The precision of it too. Because what you're doing is you're stating these musical ideas, you're preparing one for, and you're making piece by piece, and then it all becomes a cake.
Mm-hmm.
And the precision of that is what really impresses me.
I appreciate your saying that. I don't know, especially considering I don't know how precise I was being. I was thinking of Fern, when you were talking to Matt Fern Nicola, and he was talking about his recent album, and he had said like, you know, it's good, but there was this one track that he was like, it's still not quite what I had envisioned. And you were like, yeah, you're a true artist because you're promoting the album and you're still criticizing, yeah, it. And I'm sitting here and I'm like, I'm so nervous that I'm going to listen to this and be like, oh my God, that's crap. How did I do that performance live? And that's what people are going to hear. But it's just this, I don't know. I appreciate, but I have to listen. Audra, listen to this. I have to listen to your feedback because, like I said, I trust your ear. And if you're telling me it was okay, I'm like, I guess it must have been okay.
It totally was. And again, I'll spell it out for listeners who don't know what you're doing. I mean, what you heard was, even hearing that objectively, all of those voices happening at once. Again, the harmonization is great. You have a very nice voice regardless. When you hear all of that happening at once, it's overwhelming. It was, wow, what is happening? And then to tell a listener, listeners, listen up, that was you were doing that. Audra was doing that right in front of me from a Zoom feed. Right now. You know what I mean? There was no pushing a button and something, no, it was all done. And that, what I meant by precision was, you know the idea, you know, mm-hmm, it's supposed to go right now. 3, 4, And I would mess that up so hard. I feel like I would. It's so cool. It's so cool to see that.
I do mess it up pretty hard sometimes, I'll tell you what. It's still, but it's, yeah, like anything else, you just have to keep practicing it. But it is, it's all about getting it in your body. Because if it's in your body and then it's second nature, it's not, you're not necessarily even thinking about that precision. It's just like a connection. It just automatically happens.
It becomes instinct, right?
Yeah.
You build it's your own craft. That's mm-hmm, what I like about it. It's your, yeah. It's original. I was going to ask you, do you have interest in using a loop station with other musicians?
I do. Well, when you saw me play, I think April Centrone and Kira Sanchez came and played with me.
That's right. You're right.
And that was one of the first times I'd ever done something like that, because typically I don't. And it was fun. It added like a nice, it just added more layers to it. And there are times that I've written some songs and I've been like, damn, I could hear like a violin on this. And I wish I could add that. And there have been people who want to collaborate. My friend Kevin is one of them, and he's someone with whom I know I can collaborate because we've worked together before. Mm-hmm. And it interests me and it excites me. I think I get in my own way a bit when I, like I'd said earlier, when I consider that I don't have training and I lack the language to communicate what it is that's in my head. Whereas when I'm writing by myself, I can hear something in my head or have an intention and figure out how to create it and then just create it. and not have to worry about telling someone else, well, I'm thinking this, but I have no idea how to tell you what it is I'm thinking. Do you know what I mean?
Makes a lot of sense.
Mm-hmm.
It is difficult. It is a lingo. And I'll tell you, you can also like be easy on yourself about that, because there are people that have experience that just say the wrong lingo.
Really?
Yeah. Like really good musicians that I know that try to tell me like what to play for their song or something or whatever we might be doing. And they just used the wrong lingo. And it was never corrected. You know, the translation always was, I guess drummers, that's the other thing with being a drummer. You have to learn how to translate what people are talking about. Usually you get people like, actually I had a drummer on, and I'll be premiering that episode soon, but he said something really cool. He's like, when I'm working with an artist and they're trying to figure out a beat to theirs, I'm trying to figure out a beat to their song. They want me to create it. The first thing I do is I ask them, how would you move to the song? Can you show me? And then he broke down where places, he believes places in the body represent certain sound. And I was like, that's brilliant. I mean that, you know,
wait, can you describe more of that theory to me? Because that's crazy interesting.
All right. I mean, I'm going to do my best. And listeners are going to hear this regardless, or have heard it, depending. But he said something as like, he kind of beatboxed up, you know, like, and he's like, where do you feel that? He asked me, how do you feel that beat? And I said, I feel the eighth note. You know, and he's like, yeah. And what, look what you're doing. And he's like, yeah. And he's doing it with his shoulders. Like that's, he's like, I think hi-hats are in the shoulders. And then he said something, snares in like the chest, maybe. And then he said the bass drum's in the booty or in the hips or something like that. And you know, and there's something to be said about that. I think that that's another communication of music is physicality for sure.
Yeah.
But yeah, I mean, anyway, you can go easy on yourself about the translation. I bet you'd be better at it than you think, only because your skills of creating a sound, you know, like with your mouth. I mean, like, and to have it sound like an actual legitimate musical statement, you know, I can imagine you would be able to, correct me if I'm wrong, but theoretically, you would be able to like sing a Miles Davis trumpet line. Like not a whole thing, but a segment of
it. Yeah. Oh, like, yeah.
You know what I mean?
I probably do that sometimes.
Yeah.
Yeah. Which has helped me. I've said that before too. Just like listening to jazz has helped me develop an ear, for what it's worth. I don't know. And then to be able to hear what you can do to improvise, you know, what's between, you know, what works over whatever the changes are or what have you, it's helpful for sure. I also did something similar, and I guess it was sort of improvisation based, and maybe that's why it worked with my friend Kenny on his project Rang Cherries. We did it at 10 Pearl, and again, it was one of the last things. I think it was maybe in the fall that we ended up doing it, and it was more improvisation based. And I had expressed to him, I'm like, Kenny, I really don't like, how unsure I was. And he's like, just go with your gut and like improvise, and saying, just kind of trust your instincts, because your instincts are fine. And then we did a little rehearsal and he's like, yeah, just whatever that was, like what, you know, there, it's no pressure, yeah. You know, you jump in when you feel it and do whatever you hear. And it was a cool, so I guess in situations like that where I can improvise something, it's a little easier than if somebody's got something really specific in mind, or if we're trying, I don't know. I guess, yeah, that would be an ideal sort of situation if we could do more of that.
I don't know if you think this way, but the way I heard in your two performances, the way I heard the parts, they had certain roles, and certain roles were certain parts had the role of the rhythm section.
Mm-hmm.
You know, when you took that away, it was like, oh, the bass and the drums just, and the guitar just laid out
yeah.
for a second. It had, you know, you clearly understand how, you know, I guess that's your ear. That's your informed ear. So Yeah, I would definitely listen to your friend. Trust yourself.
I gotta. Yeah, you're right. I'm getting there. It takes time, and I think it is that feeling of like, well, if only I were trained. And then people have been like, well, then take a class, which, you know, would be a good thing for me to do. I think, because then even if only to get me over that imposter complex thing where I'm just like, I'm not a real musician. Oh, no. You guys are, you know, so.
No.
Yeah.
No, you're a musician for sure. Yeah. So your album, the one that's out, came out in 2018. It's called, I have it up here. Sorry. Where is it? Here it is. It is called The Wayward Warbler by Martin Houth. Everybody, you got to go give her some love. Go follow her on Instagram. Go listen to this album, please. And then, you know, then that way when her album comes out that she's working on, you're ready to listen to it, to buy it, to whatever. Yeah. And I hope you all enjoyed. I mean, thank you for performing on the show here. I mean, like, thank you. This is so cool. That you did it. You're the first performance over Zoom.
And okay.
I mean, like, it's hard. It's really, really challenging. But I knew that I was thinking, if she hooks up her station and starts doing her thing, it's going to be great. And I don't have to touch it, you know, and I don't have to do anything to it. It's going to sound great. And it did. And I wish that, it's hard to describe it. What to see you do it is so cool too. And I hope people check out your videos. You have a YouTube page, right?
I do. I have a YouTube channel. It's Martin Houth on YouTube. Instagram is Martin Houth. My Bandcamp is Martin Houth. Yeah. And there's a couple things. There's a live album too on my Bandcamp that a friend of mine recorded a live concert, like a living room concert. My friend Mike Flannery. And it's called The Flermanneries Present a Houth Concert. Wow. And that one was live. And it's got some of the tracks on Wayward Warbler and then some additional tracks on there as well. There's like a Bjork cover on there. And
wow.
And some, and I think a song that I never recorded and might not ever record. So I guess it's my first B-side.
That's so cool.
Yeah.
Everybody, you got to go. I'm going to put the links all in the description, but please go to the Bandcamp. Give her some love. Purchase the album. I always, by the way, I always try to like, I'll purchase an album from my guests because I just think that's how I know I'm supporting. You know, I'm supporting an artist right out of my account. I don't care. It's deserving because I want more of it. I get to hear it. I think that is just what a privilege. I just get to click a button and hear everybody's music, you know, good or bad, or there's no such thing as bad, but you know, but yeah, I think it's great. So give her some love, please. Click those links down below. Audra, thank you so much.
Oh, Anthony, thank you so much. This I can't tell you, it means so much to me that you even had an interest in talking to me about any of this. It comes at a really good time. I think there are a lot of artists right now that are feeling like, you know, that they're crying out in a vacuum, you know, because there's nowhere. I mean, there are a limited number of places that people can play and share, and the fact that you even asked me to be on your show is like, it was just came at a good time, and I really, really so appreciate your interest. So thank you.
Time. I think it would be great to have you back on a future episode. I like talking to you. We have a really good conversation about the nerd stuff. I like getting into the nerd details.
Love nerd details. Anytime.
Awesome. Everybody, Martin Houth, go check out the music. Go buy the album. Go give her some love on Instagram. Thank you, everybody, for listening. Thank you, Audra.
Thank you. Thank you, Anthony.
Romancing a girl, I bet we'll see it better from the sand. Could have been another. Happenstance. She perched atop a clumsy spire, holding on to one apart, one beneath the glow advancing. Its way to a bone. The body cold makes its way to a bone. As an invader makes its way to space. As an invader makes its way to space. What if it was a reflection? What if it's independent? What if that wasn't a reflection? What if it's independent, luminescent? I'm looking as hard as I can. I'm looking as hard as I can. I'm looking as high as I can. I'm looking as hard as I can, but I can't see you. I can't see you. She is there and back, unbeknownst, admiring her own hand, that of another. They are separate on the earth exist amidst this dark where distance reigns. They are synchronous in desert space, replicating, illuminate a desert city. Replicating, illuminate a desert city. Before and presently,
prenatally, posthumously. They'll transcend that prenatally, posthumously. They'll copulate it and populate it and posthumously die. I'm looking as high as I can.